bring out the appetizers, and they're just so amazing that you eat and eat, and then the main course comes, and you're feeling like you're already full. After singing those hymns, that's how I feel here. Each one of those hymns has been a sermon in itself. Each one has had just amazing truth. And wow, I've enjoyed singing those words of praise to God, singing five sermons, each one better than the last. But we're now going to open the Word of God, and we're going to look at it together. I'll be speaking today from the book of Ruth, chapter 2. Ruth, chapter 2. If you have one of our Bibles, that's the same page numbering as ours, it'll be on page 222. Last week, we looked at the first chapter of Ruth and learned a lot about the character of God through it and how God, how times of trouble come and how God's people may react to it. And we saw a contrast between the faith of Ruth on the one hand and then the unbelief of Naomi on the other. And today we're going to open up Ruth chapter 2 and see what the Lord would say to us here. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go out to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, and why should you take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also, pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean. Do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "This man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Yesterday I was out sailing on Lake Ontario with a cousin of mine, not John, another cousin, and his wife, we were out there with his family, and his wife turned to me and she said, "So you're preaching tomorrow. What's your sermon about? What's the point of it?" They're not believers. She's just curious. And I thought, you know, that's a really good question. Sometimes I think it's harder to state in a single sentence what you can say in a few thousand words up at the front of a room. So I thought for a moment, I said, the point of the sermon, the point of this chapter of Ruth, I think, is to see God's faithfulness displayed, not just to Ruth, but to all of us. Now, all of us see and understand, we all experience things that are beyond us. We don't know why God has done this. We don't know why God has acted in the way He has, or why life has brought what it's brought. Maybe someone you love dies or gets sick and you wonder, God, is this part of your plan? Maybe you lose your job, money begins to get tight, and you wonder, oh, is this how God shows love to His people? Well, today, from this passage of Scripture, we're going to see that God is faithful. God is always faithful to His people. And we'll even see some of how God is faithful to His people. And we'll do it by studying what's essentially a short story that was written 3,000 years ago. A story that was given to us by God so that it could be a blessing to us. So it could teach us about God so we could have confidence in Him, in His character. We began last week with Ruth chapter 1. And remember, this is a story, so we added these chapter divisions later on. So Ruth chapter 1 is really just the first part of the story, the introduction to the story. And let me give you a really short version of what we saw last week. We were introduced to these two people, Naomi and to Elimelech, Israelites who, in a time of famine, decided to leave their land and to go to the country of Moab. And they weren't there long before Elimelech, the husband, died, leaving Naomi on her own. The two boys, each of them got married to a Moabite wife, and then the boys, too, died. So Naomi has experienced all kinds of tragedy, and here she is alone in the land of Moab with two daughters-in-law, otherwise all by herself. She decides she needs to return to Israel. It's been at least 10 years since she left, and she realizes, now I need to return. I've got nothing left. It's all been taken from me. I need to go home. But she doesn't want her daughters-in-law to come with her. She thinks it would be a bad thing for them to come with me. It'll be bad for me. There'll be an embarrassment. It will be bad for them. They'll be outside their own culture. They won't be accepted there. And so she tells them to leave. Orpah, the first of the daughters-in-law, she decides to leave. And she returns. As Murray has just said, she returns to her land and to her gods. But Ruth, on the other hand, we see that Ruth has embraced the God of Israel. She has had this transformation of heart, and there is no way that she is going to go back to those Moabite gods. And so she says to Naomi, no matter what you do, no matter where you go, I'm going with you. And so the two of them return to Bethlehem, and they arrive just as harvest time is beginning. They left in a time of famine. Here they are, back in Israel, just as the fields are full of barley, and they're ready. Well, it shows that God's favor is once more on His land. Now, chapter 2 begins with a little note. We saw at the end of chapter 1 that our narrator, he's telling a story. At the very end of chapter 1, he just kind of jumps in and summarizes the chapter. And at the very beginning of chapter 2, he's got something else to say, and sort of a word of what's going to happen. He says this, Ruth chapter 2, verse 1, he simply says, "Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." So we learn here that Naomi isn't entirely alone in the world. She does have some relatives left in the land. Now that she's returned to Israel, she's near at least some of her relatives. There's one man who's from the clan of Elimelech. And in Israel, you had your tribe, so the 12 sons, each of them had a tribe. And then below the tribe were clans, which are kind of groups of extended families. So as we're talking about a clan, we're talking about a group of extended families. So we're not saying that Boaz was a cousin or an uncle or something. He was probably like a great-great-uncle or that sort of relationship, sort of distantly related. He was known, but he wasn't a close relative. We're told that he's a worthy man. He's a man of means. He's a powerful man in that nation. So this is just a little fact that's been tossed out there before we get back into the story. And I think it's important to remember that the people who first encountered this book of Ruth, they weren't reading it like we were. They were hearing it. There weren't books back then, 3,000 years ago. There were no books. So what was happening was somebody wrote this down on some medium, and then people would memorize it. And then you'd have professional people who would go around and recite this story, professional storytellers. And so you can imagine, he gets to the end of chapter 1, and there's just been nothing but disaster. And then he gives that little glint of hope They arrive just at the beginning of harvest. God's hand is on the land again. And then he just offers us this little thing. And by the way, there's this guy named Boaz who's related to them. And now he's going to go back to the story. And obviously, this is a storytelling technique. He's just trying to arouse our interest a little bit. He wants us to know, hold on, you just mentioned this guy Boaz, and now you're going on with the story. Why did you introduce him? What's going on here? Tell me more about this Boaz guy. But he just goes on. It's a bit of a sneaky storytelling technique. It's used all the time in books we read today. And so now we move to the heart of chapter 2. And today's part of the story is going to cover just a single day, just one day in the life of an Israelite person. The previous chapter gave us 10 years. This one's going to give us one day. It just goes from morning to noon to night. And on the one hand, it's kind of mundane. An Israelite woman goes to work. On the other hand, it's a hugely, hugely important day because this is the day that their fortunes start to change, the day that they begin to see and understand and experience God's provision. So let me tell you how we'll structure our time today in the few minutes we have together. We're just going to follow our narrator as he leads us through this story. And we'll do so under three different headings. First, we see women who are in desperate need of favor. These women need the Lord's favor. And then we see that God provides for them. We see them being granted favor. And then at the end, we see their response to that favor. We see them rejoicing in it. And through it all, we see the hidden hand of God. God is behind the scenes, quietly, quietly directing events in the way He has determined they will happen. So the first chapter has been about bitterness. The second chapter is going to be about hope and about the beginning of fulfillment. This chapter begins with two women who are hungry, impoverished. Maybe they haven't eaten for a few days. They've come back on their own. They've taken this long journey, and now here they are. At the end of chapter 1, we're left with this very honest, very almost disturbing view of Naomi. She's a woman who has fallen on hard times. She's convinced that the Lord is out to get her. She believes that God is in control. She knows that He's a sovereign God, that He's all-powerful. But she's come to believe that God is now out to get her. She looks at all the bad things that happens in her life, and she believes, God is against me. And this is a dark, dark place to be. Could you trust a God who is all-powerful, but who is not good? A God who's ambivalent, He just doesn't care? Or maybe a God who's out to get you? Could you love and trust that kind of a God? That would be an evil God, a mean, a savage God, a God who hates these people. He would create us, and then He would just despise us. That's not the God of the Bible. No wonder Naomi is down in the dumps. No wonder to believe that God is totally powerful, but out to get her. That would be terrifying. That would be a horrible place to be in. You can't trust that kind of a God. You can't express love toward Him. Have you been there before in times of pain or trial or loss? Have you been there before just thinking that, well, before I thought God's character was good, but now I think God is out to get me. I don't think this is a good God. A good God would not allow this to happen. By the end of the chapter, though, we're going to see that Naomi's faith has been restored. We'll see her heart moved in words of praise to God. She'll cry out in praise to God. So though she's convinced now that God's out to get her, by the end of this chapter, she's beginning to understand. She's beginning to receive God's favor because God has lovingly drawn her back to Himself. God hasn't left her. Naomi hasn't had to go out and do anything. God has done the work. He has drawn her back to Himself. Now this is the kind of God who's worthy of love and praise and adoration. This God who would pursue us and draw us back to Himself. This is the kind of God we need when we're in those dark, dark moments. So Ruth and Naomi have returned from Moab, but they've returned in a desperate situation. We've seen there's food out in the fields, but there may not be any food in their stomachs right now. There's no indication that there's anyone in this town who's actually helping them. No one who's bringing them food or loaning them money or doing whatever it would take to keep them going. And now no sooner do they arrive back, they come back to Bethlehem, and Ruth announces, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to go out and work. And even more, Naomi, I'm going to go and I'm going to provide for you. Look to verse 2. We've gotten our little introduction, or the name Boaz has just been thrown out there. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go out to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor. And she said to her, Go, my daughter. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. So Naomi agrees with her here. She says, yeah, this is a good plan. Why don't you go out and work and get a job and you can provide for us. Ruth is young. She's able-bodied, so she can go out and work. Ruth trusts that God is going to provide for her, but she's not trusting in such a way that she's waiting for just food to fall from the sky or for money to fall into her bank account. She's going to go out, and she knows that God will provide for her through His normal means. She's going to go out and glean. So what is gleaning? Gleaning was God's alternative to death or starvation or slavery or prostitution or any of the normal means for those who had fallen on hard times and were left completely without means. Gleaning is going through a field and taking whatever's left, picking it clean. So in God's law, He commanded, He said, if you have a field and you're clearing that field at the harvest, you cannot clear the edges of the field. And in the corners, you have to leave some grain standing there. And if you're going through the field and bits are falling, you take a handful and it falls, or you take even a large amount and it falls, you are not allowed to pick that up. That is for the poor. That has been set aside for them. And so after the harvesters would come through the field, the gleaners would follow behind, just picking up all the bits that had fallen. You are not allowed to pick the field clean. And it's important to see this wasn't the same thing as charity, right? This wasn't a handout. Ruth had to go out. She had to work hard. So God provided for His people through hard work, even for those who had fallen on hard times. So Ruth goes out to glean, and we read that she came to the part of the field. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. So outside the city, there was just a giant field, and it was divided into pieces, and different people owned different parts of that field. And she happened to come to the part belonging to Boaz. And if you look in the original, it says something like, her chance chanced upon the part of the field belonging to Boaz. A rather strange phrase, her chance chanced. It's basically saying she got really lucky and showed up in Boaz's field. So here in the Bible, we're coming across what's essentially luck, which doesn't really sound like Christian talk, does it? But I guess it depends on what you mean by luck. The author here, he's trying to show us God's perspective on this. He's trying to show us that God's hidden, quiet hand was directing Ruth. So nobody came to Ruth and said, oh, you're going out to the field. You should go to Boaz's field. He's a generous man. He'll take care of you. She didn't know who Boaz was. Nobody told her where to go. She just decided to go left instead of right. She decided to go to this field instead of that field. Somehow, just through making decisions, through the normal course of life, she ended up in the field of this man, Boaz. Hey, that's the guy we were just introduced to, isn't it? Huh. Imagine that. Hey, we just heard a couple of verses earlier about this man, and then suddenly she goes and blunders into his field. What's going on here? How'd she just happen to end up there? Again, from our perspective, it looks like chance, it looks like luck, but God quietly directed her to Boaz. Let's see what happens. And starting in verse 4. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, The Lord be with you. And they answered, The Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, Whose woman is this? Whose young woman is this? And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, She's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Now, it's again, we need to remember that this was a story that was told. And so we come across words like, behold. That's a word we don't really encounter much in the English language. You could try using it sometime at work. I don't know how it'll go. It's a strange word. But if you're picturing this as a story, what the narrator is doing here is he's saying, behold. Now, picture this in your mind. I'm telling you a story. There's no pictures to look at. So just focus for a minute and imagine this situation. He's saying, here comes Boaz walking out of the city of Bethlehem out into the fields. This is what any good landowner would do, right? He's going out into his fields just to see how harvest is progressing. He walks into the field. He exchanges a greeting. And he looks around and, hey, I don't recognize her. He sees someone. Something catches his eye. Someone there he doesn't recognize. So he just asks his foreman, who is that? Whose young woman is that? He assumes that she's somebody's servant. He just isn't familiar with her. So the foreman, he offers this explanation that essentially goes, oh, she's no one. She's just that Moabite woman who, she showed up with Naomi. You know, everyone's been talking about her. I'll tell you one thing, though. She's been working really hard. Well, what seems to have happened is that when Boaz showed up, Ruth was probably just catching a short break. She probably just sat down somewhere to catch a breather, and Boaz looks around, and he sees her, and he's just intrigued. He wants to know who she is. He hears the explanation. He goes, oh, yeah, I know who that is. Everyone's been talking about this young Moabite woman who's shown up in Bethlehem with Naomi, who's been so faithful to Naomi. I've heard about her. And he's intrigued. He's impressed by her. He's heard of all that she's done, not just coming with Naomi, but all that she's given up in order to come to this land and to leave her land. And here she is. She's working hard now. She's only just come to Bethlehem, and here she is working hard, caring for her mother-in-law. This guy is impressed, and this is a pivotal part of the story. We've drawn these two characters together. We've got Ruth, and we've got Boaz. They've both been introduced, and now we're just going to draw them together, and we're going to see what happens when their paths cross. How will they relate to one another? How will the story go? You've got this godly young woman, and then you've got this worthy man, this man of character. What will happen when they come together? Let's find out. Where's my Bible? And this brings us to the second part of the story. These women have been needing favor, and now we come to the part where they begin to experience and find God's favor. And Boaz will reveal that he is that worthy, godly man. Look to verse 8. Ruth 2, verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then Ruth fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I'm a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And Ruth said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." Well, the first thing we see is that there's got to be some sort of age difference between these two. Boaz addresses Ruth as a daughter. So he treats her as an older man should treat a younger man. And I don't think we want to look here and see that Boaz is looking at Ruth and thinking, she's a good-looking girl and she's single. I don't think we want to get there. Maybe there will be some romance in the story, but not yet, not here. And that by the same token, Ruth isn't looking at Boaz and thinking, he's a man of means, I can marry that guy. There's none of this happening right here. They've only just encountered one another. They know nothing about one another, really. And so Boaz is just being that kind, godly, worthy man. He's taking care of this woman that he knows has fallen on hard times. So he's treating her as a daughter. And the first thing he tells her is, keep working here. Keep working in my field. Don't go anywhere else. Just stay here. Keep on. Stick close to the people who are harvesting. Stay right behind them. He also assures her that the young men he's hired, they're not going to bother you. I've told them not to drive you away. And this is obviously something that would happen. You can imagine as people were gleaning, there would probably be people following behind who would be a little unscrupulous and might be trying to get a little bit more than was their share. So probably there would be people who would just kind of hold those people back so they wouldn't actually be robbing the harvest. And so Boaz has told them, let her go. She's fine. He's even said, my young men draw water. You know what? Don't draw your own water. You can just drink theirs. Here are young Israelite men now drawing water for a Moabite woman. Usually it was the Moabites who'd be drawing water, right? They're in the Israelite land. Do you see what has happened? Ruth here, she's come into Boaz's favor. She's come under his protection. Somebody is looking out for her. Really what he's doing, he's elevating her beyond all the rest of the gleaners. There would have been many more gleaners in the field, but he's saying, you are the first of the gleaners. Everybody know that. We need to watch out for this woman. And Ruth is just overwhelmed with this kindness. She falls on the ground with her forehead to the floor. She's expecting. She's been expecting. She'll be the lowest of the low, the outcast, the nobody, the one everyone would take advantage of. She figured she'd have to work just so hard to earn even the barest living. Now here is Boaz showing her favor, making it easy on her. And so she falls with her her forehead to the ground, obviously a sign of deep respect and deep humility. There's a vast gulf between these two people. You've got Boaz, the older, wealthier Israelite man, and then you've got Ruth, the young, foreign Moabite woman. There's a world between them. Ruth just needs to know. She just needs to ask, why have I of all people found favor in your sight? Why have you given this to me? I'm just a foreigner. Ruth understands this is unusual. She understands this shouldn't be. Boaz answers in a kind of indirect way. He essentially says, well, I've heard of you. I know what has happened to you. I know what's happened with Naomi, what's happened with you. I know how you've done ridiculously difficult things. You've come here instead of staying in your land. You've followed our God instead of your own God. I know who you are. He even says, I hope, I pray that God will repay your kindness. Look at a little phrase he uses. He speaks of the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. What a beautiful picture that is, hey, of a young chick just huddling against the body of its mother. That thing is completely defenseless, right? There's nothing a chick can do to defend itself. And there it is, huddling against the body of its parent, under its wings of protection. There is where it's safe and secure. And this is exactly what Ruth has had to do. Ruth has nothing, and she's had no one, but she's been trusting in God. She's had to trust in God. Her faith in God is just like the faith of that little chick and its parents. Without that protection, she'll be exposed, she'll be alone, she'll be taken advantage of. But sheltering close, huddling there, she's safe and she's secure. Do you know what it is in those times of trouble, those times of difficulty, to take refuge in God? I was thinking just the other day of Terry Stopper, that pastor in Alberta. A couple of years ago, he found that his 14-year-old girl had been murdered. And his name was splashed across the news, and he was speaking out to the media. And there in that darkest night, he said, he had to preach to himself this truth that if the gospel has ever been true, if anything he's ever said as a pastor has been true, it's got to be true in this moment. If he has ever trusted God, even a little bit, he needed to trust God now. If God has ever been good, God is good now. Even now when his heart was completely broken. And he held to this. He held fast and he proclaimed this to all of the Canadian media. He had nowhere else to go. So he took refuge in God. That's sheltering under God's wings. And that's what we need to do when we just cannot understand what's going on, when we can't deal with what's going on. We have to turn to God and shelter under his wings. And this is exactly, of course, what Ruth has been doing. She's been trusting in God. She's got nowhere else to go. Her faith is obvious to everyone around her. They see her and they say, she must trust in God or she wouldn't do this. She couldn't do this. Then the story jumps ahead. Ends there for a moment, pauses, and jumps ahead to lunchtime. I told you the story follows morning, noon, and night. So here we are at lunchtime, verse 14. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her the roasted grain and she ate until she was satisfied and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men saying, let her glean even among the sheaves and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean and do not rebuke her. Well, we see Ruth has even been allowed to eat her meal in the lunchroom here. Boaz has continued to extend kindness to her. She doesn't have to sit outside. She doesn't sit with the other gleaners. She gets to eat with his employees. And she even begins to experience some of the favor Boaz gives to his employees in that he brings her food, cooked food. And he gives her a lot of it. He gives her so much that she eats until she's full and she's got some left over. She bundles it up and stores it for later. But don't miss this. She has some left over. Ruth has left her house that morning with absolutely nothing. And here it is, it's only lunchtime, and she's already got some left over. She's got some saved up for later. Ruth has eaten, and she's had enough. She's had more than enough. Then it's time to get back to work. So Ruth gets up, and Boaz again gives out a bunch of orders. He says, Ruth is to be allowed to glean not just behind the reapers, but also between the piles, between the sheaves. So that's where you can imagine if there's a pile of grain, a lot would kind of cascade down and end up between the piles. Normally, God had not said you have to allow people to glean there, but Boaz says, let her glean there. And even more, he says, as you're going along and gathering, just occasionally grab a handful and just kind of, oops, throw that out the back, you know, let her get that too. We're going to make sure this woman has a lot of food at the end of the day. And whatever you do, do not scold her. She's allowed to be here. She's allowed to experience this favor. The long and the short is Ruth is going to have a good day. She's going to have to work hard. It's going to be hot. She'll have to work out there in the sun. But at least she has the promise of a good reward at the end of it all. And then the story jumps to the evening. Ruth and Naomi have needed favor. They found favor, and now we're going to see how they react to that favor, how they deal with it as they look at it, a tangible evidence of it. How will they understand that? How will they experience it? How will they rejoice in it? We'll see. The day is spent. The evening has come. It's closing time. Verse 17. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Now, before Ruth can go home, she needs to beat out the grain, which means removing the actual barley from the stalk, taking the good stuff, leaving behind the junk, the stuff that's no good. At the end of it all, she has an ephah, which is about 30 pounds of barley. And you figure in that day, the average laborer was eating 1 to 2 pounds of grain a day. That would be the ration of a good laborer. She's got 30 pounds, and she's worked just one day. She's done pretty well. What the author wants us to see is that she's done really well. This is a ridiculous amount. It would be kind of like you or me going to work for a day and coming back with maybe $1,000 or $2,000 for just doing menial work. The Lord has been very, very kind through the kindness of Boaz. Verse 18. And Ruth took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I worked is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. So Naomi's been waiting at home all day, right? And you can imagine her reaction when Ruth walks up. She's probably expecting Ruth to come up with a little pittance of food. Instead, Ruth walks up with this giant 30-pound bundle on her shoulder. You can imagine the reaction. And then there's even more. Ruth puts down her bundle and reaches into her cloak and pulls out, oh, and here's some roasted grain that was left over from my lunch. She not only brought home food, but she brought home cooked food that Naomi can eat right now. And Naomi knows now that something extraordinary has happened here. This is not a normal day for somebody who's going out to glean. I said from the outset that today we would see that God is faithful. And here we see God's faithfulness. Ruth left that house in the morning completely empty, and she has returned full. She left with nothing and returns with leftover, with so much that she's got more than she needs. She's been satisfied. She has an abundance. Boaz has been involved here, right? Boaz has played his part. But we're supposed to understand that it's God who had provided for her. God has directed events in such a way that these women would go from emptiness to fullness. Oh, let's be clear. Ruth and Naomi don't look at this 30 pounds of grain here and say, this is true fulfillment, true fullness, right? This bundle of grain, this isn't all they had longed for when they left Moab and came home. But at the very least, this is a kind of gesture. It's a kind of down payment. It's a kind of show or a sign from God. Just, do you see all of this? Do you see all of this? Look at that. If God can do that in one day, just imagine what else God can do. This is just a sign to them, a token of God's favor. God is providing for their needs. God is being faithful. I said as well that we see some of how God is faithful. Well, let's look at that. Naomi didn't just look at the food, but she just had to know, how on earth did this happen? We need to look at this carefully. There's a bit of a punchline here. We've already been let into the secret, right? We've been reading along the story. We know where Ruth has been all day. We know who she's been with all day. So we've been introduced to this character of Boaz. Then we've seen her come into the field of Boaz, but Naomi has no idea. She's got no idea what has gone on. And so as we listen to the story, we're kind of waiting for this. What is Naomi going to do when she finds out that this is their kinsman? Ruth says it. The man I worked with today is a guy named Boaz. You can almost imagine Naomi's eyes getting wide here. You can almost imagine. Again, remember, we've been told about Boaz, but Ruth and Naomi, we don't get any indication that they've discussed it. We don't really think that Naomi even knew that Boaz was still around. She must have known of him, but maybe she didn't really think of him when they came back. Or maybe she didn't know if he was alive or dead in the 10 years since they had gone. And then she hears this name, Boaz. Her heart is immediately moved, and she just cries out and prays to God, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken." How has God been faithful? How has God been kind? Whose kindness is it that has been extended here? Is it Boaz's kindness? Or is it God's kindness? It could go either way, right? In the sentence there. I think what Naomi is saying is something like this. May Boaz be repaid by the Lord. May Boaz receive the Lord's favor. This Lord who has not forsaken the living or the dead. And I think this beautifully draws the two together. Boaz is doing the Lord's work. God's kindness is expressed in the kindness of Boaz. Boaz's love and generosity, this is the Lord's love and generosity. These two things are really exactly the same. God's kindness is displayed through one of his people. Do you see the kindness of God here? This was God showing love for his people through his people. Boaz was a God-fearing man, a man who loved God because God loved him. He was carrying out God's work because he loved God. He was a kind and generous man because he served a kind and generous God. He obeyed God by opening up his field to those gleaners, right? And then he went above and beyond by extending this extra measure of kindness to Ruth. God showed his love for his people through his people. God didn't zap Ruth and Naomi. He didn't just kind of make that food fall from the sky. Instead, he allowed Boaz to be a means of God's blessing, special blessing. And Naomi got this. She understood it and she praised God for it. God was faithful through the faithfulness of his people. And God has called us. We call ourselves Grace Fellowship Church here. It's just a name to summarize us, this thing we call here. God has called us to live in community with one another. And so often we are the means of expressing God's love for one another. In our evening series over the last little while, we've been talking about the ordinary means of grace. Very, very ordinary ways that God shows us favor, that God blesses us. Tonight we're going to hear about the importance of commitment, the importance of being dedicated to this community, to this body of believers. A little while ago, Murray spoke about giving, about sharing what God has given us with one another. In a couple of weeks, we'll hear about hospitality, about opening up our homes to one another. And again, sharing all that God has given us. This is what God calls us to do, to be the means of his blessing, to be the means of his kindness, to assure others of God's character by reflecting God's character in who we are and in what we do. So do you love? Do you show kindness to your brothers and sisters in Christ? Do you look for opportunities to bless, whether that's through a kind word or a kind deed, or even just through saying, "I've been praying for you this week"? Do you encourage other people? So many of God's blessings come through the means of God's people. It comes through. God's goodness and kindness comes through other Christians. This is what Christian living, Christian community is all about. It's about manifesting God's love, about being the display of God's love, about being the means of expressing God's love. God shows love. He displays love through you and me. I understand love better when you love me. Do you understand that? God teaches me to love when I see how you love. And God had called Israel to do the same, to be the means, the expression of his love. And as we're about to see, Ruth and Naomi, now they do experience God's love. They now believe it. as it's been expressed through Boaz. Boaz is a great example for us in this. But hold on, Ruth brought home this big bundle of food, and it seems that Naomi's reaction was maybe a little bit too much for bringing home a couple weeks' worth of food, right? It seems like maybe it was just a little bit extravagant for that kind of a gift. Read one verse further, and it makes sense. Naomi begins to explain to Ruth that Boaz is one of their relatives. And he's not just any relative, but he's actually one of their redeemers. And this is what has gotten Naomi so excited. Maybe the way Naomi said it kind of went like this. She said, "May this man be blessed by God, since God has extended such kindness to us." You know, this man is a close relative of ours. He's one of our redeemers. It might have been that sort of growing sense of recognition of what had happened. She's moved with praise, and then she starts to think about it, kind of has to take a step back here and think, "Oh, wow, this is Boaz. I know who Boaz is. I know his role." And it seems like she's suggesting that Boaz may have some sort of a role he needs to fulfill, some sort of duty to perform. What could it be? While we hear this word redeemer, or in some translations it's kinsman redeemer, we'll look at that next week and see what this duty might entail. Let's not miss a really significant little word here. Naomi says, "He is one of our redeemers." He's one of our redeemers. And we saw last week how she wanted nothing to do with Ruth. Ruth pledged her life to Naomi, and Naomi just turned her back. Well, here she's saying, "He's our redeemer." She's drawn Ruth into this family. She's softened towards Ruth. She's softening towards God as well. We saw that she was very hard towards God. She had believed that God had turned his back on her. She would acknowledge God's sovereignty, but not his goodness, right? You remember this? Now she's acknowledging that God is kind. She speaks of the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken us. She's beginning to see God is not out to get me. She's beginning to see again that God loves her. He hasn't turned his back on her. He hasn't forsaken her. He hasn't forgotten about her. God truly, genuinely loves her. She understands this now. This abundance of food, this chance meeting with Boaz, God's kindness expressed through Boaz. All of these things have stirred her heart towards God. These are all a tangible evidence of God's love for her. Somehow this big bag of food, this stirs her heart. This shows her, this proves to her that God loves me. She understands now that this God who is all-powerful but unloving, this was a God she had fabricated in her own mind. This wasn't the true God. This was not a true reflection of the true and living God. God has drawn her back. God has done this. Naomi had made this false image of God in her mind. She had determined this is who God is. And she had told others about it. She'd even gossiped about it, right? Saying, "Don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter, for God's hand has gone against me." She's turned on God. She's told others this God cannot be trusted. And what has God done? She's blamed God for her problems. She's gossiped about him. Well, what do you do when people get you wrong? When you do something in love and people interpret it in hate? When you do something out of noble motives and people assume that you're doing it for selfish motives? Do you go looking for blood? Do you go and attack that person? Do you feel the need to stand up and say, no, this is not true. Let me tell you what's true about me. God didn't defend himself to Naomi, did he? God could have. He could have done something like that. Instead, he just showed his character. He just went on loving Naomi, and she came to rejoice in this love. And maybe we need to learn from Jesus. He who, even though he was hated and mocked, he did not open his mouth, right? He allowed his actions, he allowed his character. Ultimately, he allowed his love to speak. That's what spoke the loudest. I think that's what the Lord would have us do when we are offended. We don't necessarily need to go back. We don't need to defend ourselves. We just go on loving one another. We go on caring for them. We go on proving godly character and let God win them back. Let God turn their hearts. That's exactly what God did with Naomi. Naomi had made this false image of God. She had gossiped about God. And God just said, "No, let me show you who I am." And he drew her back. Ruth comes back with one more little important fact at the end of it all. She says, "Oh, by the way, Boaz has invited me to work in his fields from now until the very end of the harvest." So Boaz's kindness, it wasn't just a one-day thing. This was going to last right through to the end of harvest. It'll last for a whole season. These women will be provided for, at least for a time. Then at the end of chapter 2, we transition to a different phase in the story, and the narrator again just jumps in quickly and leaves us with a little fact. So Ruth kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, these harvests would last for about a couple of months, and so this verse probably takes about 2 months and just compresses it down to a couple of sentences. For 2 months, Ruth goes out into those fields every day, and she works hard. She's a mere gleaner still. She hasn't risen up in the world, really, but she's one who has really been very well blessed, especially blessed by God. Now, you remember the end of chapter 1, it gave us hope, right? It said the barley harvests were in. So we saw, okay, the land has repented. God has poured out favor on them again. The end of this chapter, we're left with just a little bit of tension, aren't we? The harvest is now over. It's going to be a long time before there's more food out in those fields. So what are Ruth and Naomi, what will they be doing in the meantime? Do they have enough to get them all the way through the winter? Will they go hungry? What of Boaz? Are we ever going to see Boaz again? What's this Redeemer talk? Isn't there more? Okay, there's got to be more to the story. You can imagine the narrator pausing here. Okay, so we're reading it in our Bibles, and we can just look and see, oh, okay, there's a chapter 3, so the story goes on. This guy was narrating it originally, and the people would have had no idea. Does the story go on? So maybe he would have just said, all right, and that's the story of Naomi and Ruth. Hope you enjoyed it. And people would have been left thinking, hold on a second. Or maybe he would just pause for a long time and take a drink of water. There's tension here at the end of it. Isn't there more? There's got to be more to the story. What happens next? What happens to Ruth? What happens to Boaz? Surely he didn't just introduce him for no reason. Well, that narrator will get back to work soon enough, but we'll need to wait until next Sunday to see how the story goes from here. We've seen a theme in Ruth through chapter 1, through chapter 2, this theme of emptiness to fullness. And we've seen God providing for the people He loves. In the past few minutes, we've followed this structure. Naomi and Ruth needed favor. They found favor. And then they reacted to it. They rejoiced in that favor. We could say it another way. Ruth and Naomi were lacking. And God provided, and then His people responded. This happens elsewhere in the story, right? Israel has been in famine. God provided rain. The question is, how will God's people respond? And maybe what we're seeing is Boaz is part of that response. God's people have been chastened, and now they're responding to God in love for Him by loving one another. Maybe Boaz is indicative of all of Israel. Ruth and Naomi have come home empty. They're lacking. God has now lavishly provided for them. How will they respond? And we saw they responded, at least Naomi responded, with great joy, great praise to God. She knew the source of this favor. This theme of lacking, this theme of emptiness, this theme of not having all you need, it's a constant theme throughout Scripture. It's not just here in the book of Ruth, it's in all of the Bible. It's really the story of the Bible. And Ruth gives us just a little picture of the whole gospel story, the whole Bible story. If the Bible tells us anything at all, if the Bible tells us anything, it's that we are all lacking. None of us is full. None of us is complete. Before God, we're all lacking one thing. We're all lacking the holiness that God requires of us. God says, be holy, for I am holy, or you will not. You cannot see the Lord. We are not holy people. We're lacking the one thing God demands of us. God is holy. He's completely without sin. We are unholy. We're full of sin. We lack holiness, but we need it. If we're to come before God, if we can ever be acceptable to Him, we need to be holy. So what can we do? Who can provide what we need so badly? Can anyone fill up what's lacking? This is the story of the whole Bible. This is the question you encounter as you begin reading from Genesis all the way through. Well, the best news I could ever tell you is this, that God has already made just the kind of provision we need. God has filled up what was lacking. And He did this in the man of Jesus Christ, a man who lived about 1,000 years after Ruth and Naomi, 2,000 years before us. This man, Jesus Christ, He took our sin upon Himself. He took all of that sin that we had committed and He took it upon Himself, and God punished Him for that sin. That was there on the cross. God punished Jesus for our sin, and Jesus was willing for this to happen to Him. And now God tells us, your sin has been dealt with there in Jesus. All you need to do now, all you need to do is trust in Him. He has provided all that's lacking. Just trust in Him. And when we do that, when we trust in Him, He gives us our goodness. He gives us His goodness, His holiness. And so we are good and we are holy before God. He takes away our sin, our badness, and He gives us His holiness, His goodness. And now nothing is lacking. There is nothing now that can stand between us and our God. We are lacking. God made provision through the work of Jesus Christ, and now He calls us to respond. You saw how Naomi responded. She responded with this great cry of praise to God. Her heart was moved in praise to God. Naomi saw just the provision of her physical needs, just 2 weeks worth of food. It was a lot, but really, it was just a couple weeks worth of food. And even that moved her heart to praise. This was just the barest reflection of what Christ has done for us. Right now, God calls on you to respond as well. You've heard this story. You've heard Christ filled up all that was lacking. How will you respond? How will you respond? God calls you right now to turn to Christ. He calls you to look to Jesus, to put your faith, to put your trust in Him, to find in Him all that is lacking. And then you can sing with us. We're about to sing. To You I Lift My Hands, in heartfelt song and praise, for steadfast love which won my heart, for never ceasing grace. This is worth praising God for. So do business with God, trust in Christ, and then join us as we sing. Sing together.